Hey, Sage.
I think he's a troublemaker, maybe.
Maybe.
You got that so right.
I'm nice.
He looks like he's in a troublemaking mode today.
Today
he's got the crazy eyes.
He always has crazy eyes.
This is true.
Hey, listeners, we have New Orleans voodoo priestess Mambo Brandy with us today. Welcome, Brandy.
Welcome, Brandy.
Hey, thanks, y'all. How you doing today, Rebel? How you doing, Sage?
We're good.
Too good. I probably better than I deserve, personally.
So what y'all want to talk about today?
Tell us about voodoo and how it came to New Orleans and how it got a bad reputation, if you know that, because it seems to have a really bad reputation. I'm here to help prove otherwise.
Sounds kind of like Sage, huh?
That's right.
Well, you could be
maybe
famous.
His is a Sage may have a little more deserved bad reputation, though, from what I hear.
Oh, my goodness.
Than voodoo does. Well, basically, voodoo came to the quote-unquote New World via the slave trade. And the people of Africa brought their own traditions with them. And basically, voodoo survived so that we still have it today because of something called syncretization. Basically, the slaves that were taken and brought to New Orleans, they had Catholicism forced upon them by the slave masters. They basically had to practice the religion of their slave masters, which at that time was predominantly Catholicism in this area. So they would mask their practice beneath Catholicism. So you would see an effigy or an image of a Catholic saint when they were really honoring their own voodoo spirit forces. So for example, you might have Saint Peter or Saint Lazarus representing Papa Legba, a spirit that is the holder of the key. And you know, in the picture, the Catholic picture of Saint Peter, he's holding that key. So they created a substitution system. And honestly, that's why we still have voodoo today, because of a very smart way of substituting their spirits for the Catholic spirits. And fast forward to today, you have people who are honoring, even though you don't have to do that, people are honoring St. Peter and Papa Legba at the same time. They're their own spirits, but honored together at the same time. It doesn't make sense to everyone, but it makes sense to us. And then in New Orleans, because we've had, it's just this big melting pot, kind of like a spiritual gumbo. We have spirits, we have our own spirits like Marie Laveau, Great Mamselle Marie Laveau. We've got the Haitian Loa. We've got the African Orisha. You'll see all of these together on a New Orleans voodoo altar. Our voodoo here is different than voodoo anywhere else in the world. You know, there's Haitian voodoo practiced in Haiti. There's African voodoo practiced in different parts of Africa. And there's New Orleans voodoo that you're only going to find here. So it's very special. At Voodoo Authentic of New Orleans, which is, you know, my place, we do our best to educate people about the truth of voodoo. We keep those New Orleans traditions alive because Haiti has Haiti, Africa has Africa, New Orleans, we just have us. So it's really important that although we honor the contributions of the African ancestors and the Haitian ancestors, we like to focus on New Orleans because no one else is going to do New Orleans voodoo like New Orleanians.
That is so true. But, you know, New Orleans does New Orleans like nobody else can.
Hey, but doesn't stop them from trying.
True, that's true.
Yeah, my God, when you look at TV shows, you will see, it's so funny to watch, whether, no matter where this show is produced, if they're doing New Orleans, you may have everyone running around speaking French, or we all sound like, you know, Southern Belles. It all depends on where the film is shot, but everyone has their own version of what New Orleans is supposed to look and sound like. And I'm born and raised in New Orleans. My mom, my grandparents, I go back in New Orleans for generations. So I am, for better or worse, what a New Orleans person sounds like. Although we do have parishes and we have wards, and you have people uptown, they sound a certain way. Ninth Ward sounds a certain way. Seventh Ward sounds a certain way. So depending on where you are, we all have our own little flavor in how we talk, the words we use, what we call things. We do not say pop. We say soft drink. you know when someone's local or not by what they call things. And I guess that's pretty much anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Culture is an amazing thing. And that you mentioned that depending on what part of New Orleans you're from, you'll use a different vernacular or you'll have a different accent. I mean, and that's very similar to a lot of places in America that have these kind of melting pot types of communities going on, like in New York and even in Los Angeles, where I'm from. There's definitely different ways of speaking, how things are referred to. I mean, the cultures all over are amazing, and New Orleans is a world-renowned culture. Just for, I mean, not just the spiritual voodoo aspect of it, but the liveliness of the never-ending party, I guess. I mean, I don't know if that's accurate.
Oh yeah. Where people come for the food, the voodoo, the live music. New Orleans really does, there's a spirit here that is New Orleans. And it is the quarter too on its own. We have New Orleans, it's one big organism, but there are just pieces and parts of this body. And the quarter, I gotta say, the quarter's the heart. The quarter is the heart of that New Orleans body, and it's also made up of its own parts. So we're all going through this crazy time with COVID, and there's a lot of restrictions. There's still so much to see and love about the quarter, and people are still coming here. But let's face it, when you don't have that live music just flowing through the streets, and whether you're a drinker or not, you got to admit, you know, the bar culture in New Orleans. I'm not a drinker myself, but I appreciate all that the bar culture brings. You've got, you know, it's not just a place to go and drink. It's a part of our history. Places like Jean Lafitte's Blacksmith Shop. You're not going in there just to have a drink. You're going in there to participate in a part of our history. And
I agree
so
with
when
that I do,
yeah. When you have bars closed, people think it's a bit superficial. Oh, so what? You know, you can't get an alcoholic beverage. It's not that. You can't participate in a part of our history and culture when you can't go in a place like Jean Lafitte's Blacksmith or Harry's Corner Bar. You know, so many historical things have happened in these places that when you can't enter them, it's not just about not getting your hurricane on, you know, right. not getting your special name drink of choice on. It's, you're not able to participate in a part of our history and culture. So the quarter works together like that organism we were talking about. So until everything's open, nothing's open in a way, because we all work together. But I got to tell you, some of the people that come, they're getting an opportunity to see a little bit of a surreal quarter, almost the after Katrina quarter in a way. It's quieter. You get to enjoy some of the things that you may be distracted in other times. Like,
You can walk down the street and really appreciate the architecture right now. You can see things. The quarter always has something to offer. But I got to tell you that not having that, not having music streaming from every window, and I'm ready to have it back. I'm ready to have, sure, you know, our whole heartbeat back. We're open, you know, Voodoo Authentic is open, but man, do I miss hearing all that live music coming from left, right, having, you never know. You might be sitting in the shop making a gree-gree bag and a second line passes by, you know, and whatever you're doing, you're just like, this gree-gree bag's got to wait. I got to get out into that second line. And that's the beauty of New Orleans. Sage, you were talking about the, you know, everything being a party, and Rebel, you were saying the same.
Yeah.
It's true. Whether you have a vegetable that's grown here, a fruit that's grown here, it gets a festival. You know, Merlitzon Festival, Strawberry Festival. You know, if you're going to pop out of the ground as a vegetable, you get a festival. We find, and even somebody passes away, we have a party. A hurricane's coming, we have a party. Well, Katrina turned into a, you know, not so much of the party we were anticipating, but
a drunken brawl, right?
Yes. But, yeah, it's a very special place, and I'm definitely proud to call it home.
Well, that you should let us know that everything gets a festival. Our understanding is that you yourself have been running a festival there in New Orleans for almost 20 years now. Voodoo Fest, is that right?
Crazy to think about it, but over 20 years. Wow. Yeah, since 1999, Spirit inspired me to do a festival called Voodoo Fest. And we started at Congo Square in 1999. But after Katrina, there was no way you could do it in Congo Square. It was too much damage. So we had to move it to right in front of Voodoo Authentica, the 600 block of Dumaine. We get that blocked off every year on Halloween, October 31st, whether it falls on a Saturday, a Thursday, a Wednesday, because that's a day very special to the spirits. The veil is thin. We honor the ancestors. We teach people about voodoo. Priests and priestesses come from everywhere. Drummers come from everywhere. And 1 to 7, we do it all day. And at 7 o'clock, that's when we have our closing ancestral healing ceremony. Drummers just come out of the woodwork. We call out to spirit and they answer back. It's a very moving part of the festival. People, they get to talk to, feel, and experience ancestors that are a part of their life, but they're a part of their life in a very special way. In a very special way on that day. You know, you talk to your people that are on the other side all the time, but you don't always get that answer back. And there's something about Voodoo Fest, there's something about Halloween with that thin veil where we talk to them, we feel them, we hear them, we call out to them, and you can see people just brought to joy, brought to tears, by getting this close contact with people that they miss and love so much. It's really something special. It's really something special. And it's all free. That was part of the, when Spirit inspired me to do this, they very clearly stated, this has to be free. This has to be open to all people. And we cook, I mean, jambalaya, butter beans with pickle pork and sausage. We have Haitian food, New Orleans food. We cook for days and we put that all out on the street for people to come eat, whether it's someone who is homeless, whether they're a banker, a school teacher, everybody comes together, eats together, learns together, sings together, and learns about the many contributions that Voodoo has made to New Orleans culture and heritage. We get students, we get people of all ages. Of course, we get trick-or-treaters too.
Right.
We got big bowls of candy out for them. But everyone comes, learns, celebrates, honors the ancestors together. They learn about the voodoo roots of our music, our rhythms, our food. So much of what makes New Orleans, New Orleans, is voodoo in origin, African in origin. You hear so much about the French and the Spanish. You've got the French Quarter. You know, you have signs all over the place that say, this street was named after this Spanish lord. And so you have so much focus on the French and the Spanish. And yes, that's a beautiful part of our history, but you don't often get to learn about the African part of our history and those roots. So Voodoo Fest is a time where we get to honor that. We get to show, hey, you may not have known, but all these things that you love about New Orleans, a lot of them are African in origin, and more specifically, voodoo. So,
for example, what are some of those things that people wouldn't think of?
Some of the things that people think of are, well, let's just take our traditions. Like, you'll see people come up in New Orleans in families, and they do stuff. They don't know why they do it. They just know their grandma did it, their mama did it. And like cleaning your front steps with red brick dust. Well, how clean does red brick dust really get stuff? You know, let's face it. It's not a Lysol or a Comet of a cleaner of choice. Well, that's a spiritual cleaning. And that's something we do to only allow energies that we want to enter. You'll see people that might have ill intent not be able to enter a house where that red brick does. They think twice, they turn around, they go somewhere else. So that red brick dust, you know what I'm talking about.
I should put some of that on my front porch.
Absolutely.
And watch them on my Ring doorbell. And see who turns away.
It's a real good test to do. And you'll see that this stuff really works as long as it's New Orleans red brick dust. But These are some of the traditions that people pick up from us and then take to their homes because they see that they really work. But that's just a quickie example of something that you grow up doing here and you don't know. This is a voodoo tradition. This is a spiritual tradition. And there's so many of those that people just grow up doing here and they're not sure why. They just know their mama did it, their grandma did it, and they're doing it. We are a place steeped in tradition. And as I said, we don't always know why. We just know it's the right thing to do. Look, take our jazz funerals. That's a very African tradition. When we had the Pope of Voodoo years ago, rest his soul, Dagbo Hunan, he came years and years ago. And when he was exposed to, he ate jambalaya. He's like, this is African. He saw a jazz funeral. He said, this is from my home. And So you get people, at my family that's Haitian, they come and they see the architecture in the quarter. And they're like, I feel like I'm in Haiti. So that's when it really becomes so obvious when you have people that are visiting from Africa, from Haiti, and they feel so at home because of what they're eating, what they're experiencing, the rituals, the culture that they're seeing in the streets, and they feel at home. And a lot of people get the wrong idea. They're like, oh, well, this is watered down African stuff or watered down Haitian stuff. And you know who says that? It's Americans. because
we ruin a lot of stuff.
Oh God, I won't go there. But what I can tell you is that when people, Africans from Africa, and that have never been to New Orleans and it's their first time, or Haitians from Haiti and they come for their first time, they're not saying anything like that. What they're saying is, oh my God, I'm so glad to see our culture here evolving and becoming something else and finding its home and its own way to express itself in a new place. And that's what Dagba, the Pope of Voodoo at that time, and his son who came very recently that we hosted, the current Pope of Voodoo, Dagbo's son. We posted an African king. This has all been within the last year or two. I think you may have seen the article about us hosting the king of Porto Novo. And when they come, they're honored, they're excited to see these traditions continuing here. Not seeing something that's watered down, but something that has survived and evolved against all odds. And it gives them joy in their heart and their spirit and their soul to see how we are expressing their traditions. You'll see a doll that may have been something that was African, and they don't see, oh, well, that's not made the same. They see, oh, I see what you're doing here. You're making a doll with your indigenous materials. Right. It may have been made of something in our culture, but y'all are using sticks from your area, the Spanish moss from your trees.
Right.
Continuing these traditions in your own ways, which is what you have available. And that's one of the beauties of Voodoo, is it's very adaptive. Voodoo is its own spirit. It's a collection of spirits, but it's also a collective of spirits. And all of that energy is Voodoo. And where it finds itself, where it lands, it adapts and adopts to what is in its area, the people, the materials, and it has a life of its own wherever it lands. And you had the slave trade, people were taken to, you know, Cuba, Brazil, all over the place. And you'll notice that the traditions are called different things. They're not all called Voodoo. But you will see the similarities. You will see that one culture may call a spirit Elegua. One culture may call that spirit Papalegba. One culture may call it Papalaba. One culture may call it Ishu. But they're very different spirits, and they all have their own identities, but they all have similar attributes. Guardian of the crossroads, the first spirit called in ceremony, the ones that open the roads to communication with the spirit world. So they have the same origins in Africa, but where they are now and where they landed, they have taken on a life of their own, and they have different attributes. But if I don't care if I'm in Brazil or Cuba or Haiti or Africa, wherever you are, you can identify. You know what's good. If you are on this spiritual path, you definitely can identify what's going on in a ceremony anywhere. You know that, okay, I know what this is. We're opening and cleansing this space. We're saluting the directions. We're opening to a crossroads spirit, whatever that crossroads spirit is called in this particular region. So that's a beautiful thing. No matter where you land, you know that, you know what's going on, even if it differs from your own tradition in your own home.
I was just in listening to what you were saying as far as voodoo and how it's gone through you know, so many cultures and come from so many different places and is expressed, you know, from one culture to the next in a different way, but still very recognizable. It made me think about one of the first songs I ever learned how to play is a song by the Rolling Stones. And it's called Sympathy for the Devil. And the thing that really hooked me about it were the beats in the back. They were playing, there's like congas going on in the back, and it's a very distinct beat that goes through it. And I remember speaking to my grandfather about it, because he was a conguero in Los Angeles when he was a younger man. And he would show me how to do patterns on the congas. And I would ask him about the song. He's all, those are African beats. Those are African, legitimate African voodoo beats. Be careful. Be careful if you want to play them.
Yeah, smart guy. That's because the rhythms are, as I'm sure you well know with your history, the rhythms communicate and call different spirit forces. And they're such an important part, again, in the similarities of place to place, culture to culture. We will all, what you'll always see are those drum rhythms. They can vary wildly. A Haitian rhythm, a Haitian drum rhythm, you're using different drums than you're using in throughout Africa. So even though the drums are different and the rhythms are different, what they have in common is that they are calling. They are one of the very important things used to call spirit to ceremony. When we have a voodoo ceremony, we draw veve. These are spiritual symbols that are done in cornmeal or coffee grounds. They're very intricate. They look a little bit like filigree. They're spiritual symbols, like a signature. And we draw those on the ground. We're singing certain songs. We're playing certain rhythms. We're making certain food and liquor and other offerings that are very specific to calling each spirit. Papa Legba has his own rhythm, his own offerings, his own songs. Urzuli Dantor, Urzuli Freda, all of these different spirits have their own colors, their own offerings, their own rhythms, their own drum beats, and the things that you do to call them to ceremony. And when you do call, people think, oh, well, spirit coming to ceremony, that must be once in a blue moon. It isn't. If spirit doesn't come to your ceremony, it's like the guest of honor didn't come to your party. And that's why wow. you have a lot of people that call voodoo ceremonies parties, because they are parties in given for spirit. We all attend, but the parties are given for the spirits. And if that spirit doesn't come, your guest of honor didn't show up. So it's expected, but never commonplace. It is always, always special. And so their attendance is expected, but never commonplace. It's always an act of the divine. It is always special, but it is expected. And when spirit comes through, they basically ride the initiated participants there. Mambo, Ungan, priests, priestesses, those are the people who ideally are ridden by spirit. They deliver messages to those in attendance. It can be a very small matters and very large ones. Some people, they may just need disputes settled. Some people, they need major spiritual messages delivered to them. They may be on a very, very wrong path, and spirit can come down pretty hard on people who may be on the wrong path. sometimes spirits just come in to say, keep it up. You're doing a great job. But it's one of the most magical and divine parts of ceremony when spirit comes through. As I said, it's expected. It's commonplace, but never common. If that makes sense.
Oh, no, it does. Makes total sense. Yeah. And it also, to me, what you're saying directly speaks to the phrase you used earlier about on Halloween, the veil being very thin. And I'm guessing what you're saying is it's a very, the perceived barrier between this world and the other world.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yes, it's so thin that, you know, there's y'all obviously are in radio and we're speaking over airwaves right now. And you know that there's different channels on radio we can tune into. And it's like these spirit, they're always there, but we're just not dialed in. We've got so many distractions that we're frequently dialed into the wrong frequency. And we cannot hear these messages from spirit and from our ancestors. And there's something about Halloween and then the whole season, the season of the Gede, the season of the spirits of the dead.
Yes.
They're vocal. They're there. They are louder. And if we just tune in, we can hear them in a way that we somehow, they're always available to us. They're always available to us to guide us. They come to our, they come through our dreams. They come through different signs. It may be through what's going on with a certain plant or a certain herb. And if we watch that and we pay attention to the signs, we can get these messages. There's things we can do year round, like spiritual misas, lighting candles, having altars that connect us with our ancestors. Altars are like a telephone to the spirit world. And if we know how to listen, we can receive these messages year round. And initiated practitioners, experienced practitioners, they know how to do this. But for many people who gather during Voodoo Fest with us, they aren't initiated. And they don't know exactly how to communicate year round with those spirits of their ancestors. And it provides every person that opportunity that practitioners get year round to feel and experience something that is very special. Because as an initiated practitioner, yes, I know ways to communicate throughout the year, but for people who are just, they're living their lives, they're doing their jobs, they're, you know, they've got the noise of the phone, the TV, the bleepity bloopity of text, this, that, distraction. And Halloween, there's just, I don't know, somehow the distractions, we let those go. We completely get involved in the drum, the songs that connect us to spirit. And it's like the heavens open up, that veil gets real thin. And we know collectively at that point that we're all there for a common purpose. And that common purpose is to hear and be heard by our ancestors. And that is why people, even if they've never had an experience like that before, they have that experience at Voodoo Fest on Halloween. They receive those messages. And that's why there's so many, there's laughter, there's tears, there's joy, there's deep, deep feelings that happen on that day. And people come back year after year to have that experience. So it's special. It's moving. It means a lot to so many. It certainly means a lot to me. And everyone has that opportunity. We have an altar to ancestors set up right there on the street. People can come, leave an offering, honor their loved ones that have crossed over. knowing that at 7 o'clock, we are going to be all full guns blazing, full drums blazing, using every weapon in our arsenal. I hate to use the word weapon, but, you know, everything we've got, we are using it to call on those spirits for everyone present, not just for our own people, not for Brandy's people or Ungan Jesse's people or, you know, Mambo Maggie's people. No, we're calling for everyone's people to be heard and communicate with their loved ones that are still here. And they feel it.
And really, it's like, to me, I've always had this this particular view of death, and that it's merely just kind of a discarding of this, you know, this bag of bones that we have, and just our energy remaining in the world, but just, I guess, like you said before, it's just now it's on the other side of the veil. And so with, you know, with the voodoo and the offerings and, you know, Halloween and things like Voodoo Fest, it's no wonder that, you know, people will have these experiences and then come back so they could set aside all these distractions of this world or this partial world that we can see and actually be more fulfilled with the entire world as it really exists.
I think that's a really good point. Is, again, this is not a world that just happens on Halloween. Right. As you said, this is going on all the time. It's just that we truly do, my God, we've got more distractions than ever. And these worlds are going on simultaneously every day, every minute of our lives. But we've got so much calling us away from that depth, from that communication, from those connections to what show us that we are spiritual beings. Pretty much what you said, we're spiritual beings having a temporary physical experience is, I think, kind of summing up what you said.
Yeah.
And it's an oversimplification, but it is an oversimplification because it's simply true. You know, we are living in a very convincing illusion, but an illusion nonetheless that comes with constant distractions of, you know, what's important. We got to get that paper turned in. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. And yes, all those things are important on the physical plane, but when it comes to eternity, boy, let's face what's really important. And that is our connection to God in whatever way you perceive God, male, female, both. You just want to call it universal energy. Whatever God is to you, it's God is ever present. Spirit is ever present. And the only thing that keeps us from seeing that are the distractions of the physical world. So it's you know how people say, we know God's around all the time, but church on Sunday, it's our special time. It's like your date with God.
Right.
You know, it's like your husband and wife, or your husband or your wife and wife, whatever your relationship is, you're with them all the time. But date night, you put aside that special time. You know, you have a special drink, a special food, and you just look at each other. You put your phones away, you look in each other's eyes, and that's your special time to connect with one another. And so I think about church, for people who are churchgoers, that's like date night with God. And you don't have your phone ringing during church. It's like, this is your special time to connect and say, you are special to me. I am special to you. We know that that's not really necessary because we can have that very same connection we have in church on Sunday with God every day of the week. But with all these physical distractions, we have to put aside that date night time with one another, with God, with our spirits. So that's why in voodoo, each spirit has its day of the week. So we do something, we actually have marriages to spirits. I'm married to some spirits. I'm married to Papa Ogu Badagri, Ogu Farai. I'm married to Papa Dambala. And you set aside, once you marry, like this is a marriage with a certificate and rings, you name it. I have rings on right now to honor my Ogu and Dambala marriages. And you set aside a certain day of the week for each spirit that you're married to. And that's their time. You don't have anyone else in your bed at that time. It goes beyond the physical. That's a special night where you reserve for that spirit. They come to you in dreams. They come to you in very meaningful ways. They convey messages to you. And that continues. That's like your date night with that spirit. Again, it's not that they're ever away from you. It's not that God or spirit or universal energy, whatever you want to call it, it's not that they're ever separate from you. It's that we separate ourselves from them with the distractions that we allow in our world. And let's face it, to survive in this world, we can't help but feed into those distractions. We do need to live. We do need to eat. We do need to do our jobs. So it's not like they're needless distractions. We need them to survive on this physical plane. So that's what makes quote unquote date night with God and these spirits essential and important to all of us that aren't allowed to just live on a mountaintop in a cave and commune with spirit 24/7. We need date nights. We need date nights with spirit and with the divine. And when we have things like Voodoo Fest and just our regular ceremonies, that is our special time to commune where spirit comes through people. And the people who they come through, they don't have any memory. Let's just say Sage or Rabble, you all are at a ceremony and you're initiated practitioners. Spirit comes through you, talks through you, may even speak in a language that you don't know and communicates with people and lets them, can heal people. It can be simple, like you're having a problem with your wrist. You just can't get past it. Doctors can't help you. Spirit has healed people. They have healed people physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, done in minutes what the medical establishment couldn't do in years. Healed deep emotional wounds, physical wounds. Does it happen every time? No, it does not. But it's happened more times than I can shake a stick at, that I have been present to witness. And that's been a part of my life. I've had a wrist that, good Lord, I couldn't get the better of. And in one ceremony, I got a healing from spirit coming through an Ungan or a voodoo priest that nobody could help me with. I've seen people that could not let go of just a few examples. A person who couldn't let go of the abuse of their father. They carried this with them their whole life. They just couldn't get past it. And they'd been in therapy. They'd done everything that they knew how to do. And spirit healed that. They healed that. They communicated with them, not just verbally, but energetically, where there was an understanding that superseded anything physical, anything verbal. it got through to their soul, their psyche in some way, and they were able to understand the reasons for those experiences, how it participated in their growth, and they were able to move past trauma, to move past something that they just couldn't seem to move past. So when I say spirit is powerful and that these connections, these moments are powerful in ceremony, I say it because they are. And the healing, it's not temporary. The healing is permanent, and people are able to move on from things that they weren't able to move on from in any other way.
That so is amazing.
It really is. And that's why I say it's commonplace in ceremony to have spirits visit every single ceremony, the Lawan, the Orisha, but always divine. Common but not commonplace. I can't beat that dead horse enough, because it's so true. I wish people thought of this as more accessible, as something that they could act, that they could access the power of spirit all the time. But people don't see that. They feel like they have to be in that cave or with that guru. They feel like they have to go on these big pilgrimages.
I think that's an American thing.
Super American.
Yeah, look, like we I am the best.
I'm a proud American, and I love my country. I will say that till I'm blue in the face and the cows come home. I am a proud American, and I am not an American disser. But what I can say is that I have found specifically in voodoo that Americans tend to go on pilgrimages thinking that what they seek needs to come from without. They have to go without and take long travels in order to see what is within. Whereas people who have been born in these cultures, they already know the secret that the Americans have to spend thousands in flights and rides on donkeys and all this to find out that the answers are within, and they're right there. That's the thing. We're very task oriented in this country. And if you don't present us with adequate homework, and that's why people, sometimes we have to give people many tasks to do. Like someone comes and they say, okay, we have a problem. And we need spiritual assistance. So we have to say, you'll hear mystics have, and look, it's not just American. I was kind of getting hard on Americans, but there's a reason that mystics have been giving people homework. Like, okay, you need to go to the tallest mountain. You need to climb that mountain. You need to find this special egg that is guarded by a very protective mama bird. You need to take that egg and find a flower. And so you're basically getting the person's mind off of the problem and onto the solution. But when it comes down to it, the solution was actually in the task and the homework, rather than the need. Yes, some very special ingredients are needed, but the main thing was the obtaining of those ingredients, because it immediately got the person's focus off of the problem and onto the solution. All of a sudden, they're task warriors. They've got something to do. It gets their mind off of the task. And so they bring all these ingredients. They're made that potion. And yes, the potion and the ingredients do have power, but the power of the ingredients isn't near the power of the effort that it took to gather those ingredients in getting the person in the proper mindset, a solution rather than a problem mindset, so that they could actually complete that task with the proper mindset. And we still do that today. When someone comes to us with an issue, we immediately get them on that homework. And look, today, you may not get someone, at least in this country, they may not be able to go to that mountain, get that special egg, fight that mama bird for that egg, but it may be you got to go to Schwegman's grocery store, and you may need to get an exotic fruit that they only have available once every 2 months. For that, that's effort for today's person.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, something of value like your prized goat today, that may be money. You know, we have value in money, whereas another time may have been your prized goat was the most valuable thing that you had. Right now, that $500 may be your most valuable thing you possess at that time. So it's exchanging things of value that actually matter to you. If something has great value to you, it has great value to the universe and can help you accomplish a goal. We still work in a world where we barter with spirits. So if you come and you leave, let's say you come to Voodoo Authentica, we have dozens of working altars that are lit and empowered every single day by our priests and priestesses. If you come and you leave a stick of gum that you happen to have in your purse on an altar, what does that really mean to you? Sure, you're leaving something, but does it have intrinsic value to you? If you take let's take a penny. Well, if you go to the bank, a penny's a penny. But what if that penny is a penny that you found on a very special journey, and you've kept that penny with you for years and years, and it has brought you so much luck and so much value, that has value to spirit way beyond its monetary value. And spirit knows that. So just the idea that we see a penny on our altar, that penny may not just be a penny. That penny has significant value to that individual. So a lot of the barter and trade system with spirits, it's about what has meaning and value to you. And if it's just like, let me dig in my pocket, here's a stick of Wrigley's. Well, you kind of give what you get. So right. I don't expect much. If what you're giving spirit has no value to you, don't expect a whole lot of value to be given to you. Whereas if you give something from the heart, it's your absolute last dollar. That's a leap of faith. And that's a leap of faith spirit rewards.
You know, that you mentioned you give the example of the penny. And since we're talking spirits and we're going into the thinning of the veil where they all become closer to us, the time of year where they become closer to us. My mother always brought me up that when you see a penny, like on the floor, you only pick it up if it's heads up. If it's heads down, you turn the head up and leave it be for someone else to collect the luck. So I've always done that. I've spent most of the last
Sage,
30
I just
years
fell
of my life turning over pennies.
I just fell deeper in love with you and your mom. Yeah. Because that right there that's totally New Orleans. And that is something I do to this day. If that penny isn't heads up, you turn that thing up and you leave it for someone else to get that luck. You do not pick up anything but a heads up penny. So 100% with you on that. We are brothers and sisters
in the supernatural. The strange, here's the thing that really gets me about that.
Works. Though, I do the same change. I don't care. Yeah. Yeah.
Every now and again, I will find one that is heads up. And it usually happens to me when I'm like overly distracted, or my spirits aren't where they should be, or I have, you know, things that I'm rolling around in my head, and it always happens to me. I'll be thinking about something and it'll be a little bit troubling to me. And I'll just happen to look down and there'll be a heads up penny staring right at me. And the rest of the day is cake. It all just kind of lifts. It brings me closer to my mother, who's since passed these past 7 years. And it brings me closer to, well, you know, it takes me further away from the distraction of this world and centers me when that thing happens to me.
Well, you know what? First of all, that's beautiful, and rest your mother's soul. And I'm sorry to hear about her passing. And it's another thing we do, this sign of the cross and the kiss to always honor, you know, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
But these are some of the signs that I was talking about that let you know that your people are right there with you. It's not, is your mother around? That is her telling you, I am around. I am with you. And when you see that penny, like, you could have walked right past it. Something drives you to make you look down. And that is your mom. And that is her letting you know, look, this is my opinion, and this is the way I see things, but that's the way I take them. This is a special thing between you two, and people walk past pennies all the time, step right over them, never notice them. You are noticing them right when you need to, right when you need that inspiration, right when you need your mother's intervention and closeness in your life. And those are the everyday miracles that, boy, I wish no one would avoid, but so many of us do. We walk right past those pennies or that special flower that meant so much to a beloved aunt of ours that has crossed over. We walk past that beautiful flower that's not in season, that has no business being there, and we walk past it without a second, because we were on the phone. We had other things on our mind, and instead of stopping and looking and seeing, there she is. She's with me right now. So that, it's not a fantasy. It's not in your head. It is straight up your mother saying, I'm here. I'm with you. And don't you dare pick up that heads down penny, right. That tails right. up penny.
Right. Turn it over and let someone else have the luck, mijo. That's what she would say.
And your day, as you just said, all of a sudden, your entire energy is changed because of that experience. That's not the power of a penny. That's the power of your mom and spiritual connection to her. You know, and these are the beautiful miracles that we all have the opportunity to participate in every single day in our lives, and we walk right past them. You know, like bulls in a china shop, just ignoring what's around us, you know, like bludgeoning through life instead of seeing the magic, the wonder, the miracles that are everywhere. I'm just glad to hear that you see them, you notice them, and you're enriched by the experience.
Oh yeah. I've actually lately, because my vehicle isn't working, I've been walking, doing a lot of walking to everywhere. And I've noticed that my demeanor is a lot more elevated, for one. And when I'm walking, my focus is on the sky and what nature I can see as I'm walking, and my breath and the sounds. And I feel like I'm taking in more of the entire world as opposed to just being fixated on all of the distractions. It's been really, my spiritual journey has really been expanding lately. I mean, the walking thing is just kind of an addition to it. And the penny thing, that happened to me last week.
Well, you know, that's the lemons out of lemonade.
Yeah.
Lemonade out of lemons, rather. And what's beautiful is that we can get that, as you've seen and probably seen so many other times besides this example, we're presented with these quote unquote challenges, like we all are right now, you know, and we're all experiencing these times in so many different ways. Your challenge may not be specifically COVID related with the car, but we're given these opportunities to experience life in a quieter, more personal way. And we can take advantage of a lot of it the way you're doing by noticing what's around us, the beauty, the messages. I'm interested to know if you've seen any other messages besides the penny while you have been on this walking adventure.
Here's something specific. The other day as I'm walking in, it starts to rain. And it started to rain to a volume where if I continued to walk in it, I would have been drenched by the time I got to work. So I went ahead and I ducked into an awning and I pulled my hat out of my backpack. And as I put it on, I watched the rain subside, which is not normal, which is not abnormal for Tennessee, because if you don't like the weather around here, wait 15 minutes and it changes.
That's New Orleans too.
Yeah. But in the time it took me to take in what was going on, it subsided. So then I go into work, and as I'm walking in, I look through the window and I see one of my coworkers, and she sees me and she starts waving her arms and all excited. And I walk in the door, she's like, you won. And I said, well, what did I win? And we had this contest where there was a mason jar full of M&Ms, and it was guess how many M&Ms and you win a prize. And I made a semi-educated guess. I mean, I kind of counted the bottom and I looked at the tie, kind of made some guesstimation math on it, and I was within five. So I won.
That's pretty dang close.
And then later on that day, someone else pulled my name out of a hat to win something else. I was like a winner, including in my mind, making the rain stop so I could finish walking to work. I was a winner three times that day. And it was just from kind of riding
the wave.
Riding the moment, the wave, feeling the energy. It just, I didn't think about it. I just acted as the world stimulated, as the world around me stimulated me, I just reacted to it and didn't buy into any of the distraction. I didn't buy into any worry. I just kind of let myself be open. Like you were saying earlier, like you're an open vessel. We channel the spirits in one way or another. And it really, I found myself throughout that whole day just kind of being somewhat amazed. It's almost like I was in the passenger seat of my own life, and it was a fun ride. It was just having such a great ride.
I gotta say, that is a beautiful thing when we are able to ride the wave. And I call it the same thing. I'm at my best when I'm riding the wave. And it sounds like letting life live you, but it's not that at all. It's just being on the proper wavelength where things are easy, where you know that you're in sync with what the universe, what God has planned for you. And I call it riding the wave because it's because we've all hopefully as kids or even as adults, we've ridden that perfect wave, whether it's surfing or just on your raft, where we're carried where we want to be by the waves. We're effortlessly carried. And that's the ideal. Boy, if we could live like that every day, of allowing ourselves to go with the flow of what the universe intends for us. Because look, I don't know what all of y'all believe, but I believe that the universe is made up of love. That is the defining energy of the universe. You know, not to be all, you know, new agey, whatever, but that to me is the most important particle that runs this show, is love. And I think if you look back at the experiences you've had where you were quote unquote riding that wave, I think you'd find the overwhelming feeling, and I'm being presumptuous here in my guess, but I think that you'd feel the overwhelming feeling was a love, a compassion, an understanding for your fellow beings. And you weren't fighting anything. You were rolling with it. You were seeing a logic in things, and it just felt right, and it felt natural, and you felt like you were a natural part of something. And it's hard to be like that every day in this world, but when we are, I can just tell you, it's what I call it too. I call it riding the wave. And man, am I at my best when I'm riding the wave and just allowing myself to be a participant in the highest vibrations and the highest energetic levels of the universe. Because there's a part of me that intrinsically knows, yes, this is the Brandy you're supposed to be. And at that moment, you were the sage that you were supposed to be. And yes, you just knew it. You knew it in every fiber of your being. And you're like, oh my God, why can't I feel this all the time? Because I know right now I'm being and feeling what I'm supposed to be and feel. And they're beautiful days and they're beautiful moments. And when they happen, all I can say is ride them till you can't ride them no more, because they are a beautiful thing.
They sure are. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I know a lot of people would say, well, you know, how do we make that more of a part of our life on a daily, at least that's what would come to me, is, you know, this feels so good. How do I make that a part of my life every day? Well, I tell you that on the physical plane, it's really hard, because we do have things that happen. We do have, sadly, things that don't go our way, people who pass away, things that really matter to us on this physical plane, that we got to deal with those things that are placed in front of our face on this physical plane. All you can do then is work on your perception of those things, how we view them, what lessons we can get from them, and then as soon as we can, try to get back on that wave, you know, as best we can. Because I hate to say it, doesn't sound that spiritual, but it's not realistic. We're put on the physical plane for a reason, to learn. Again, these are all my opinions, but from my experience, we're put in this physical plane to learn very specific things. Of those things, I believe some of the most important are empathy, so that when you do have a friend that contacts you about something going on with them, if you've had no quote unquote negative experiences, what use are you to that person? How can you relate to them? How can you assist them if your life has been a big bowl of cherries from from Jump Street? It's like when someone calls me and they have something going on about a relationship, whatever it be, an alcoholic in their life, a drug addict in their life wreaking havoc. You know, I'm a real person. I've had real experiences with a variety of people and clients in my life. So when someone comes to me, I can relate to them on something beyond a bowl of cherries, a fluffy bunny way, you know, like, oh, it's all going to be okay. It's all part of the plan. No, I know what your pain is real. You're feeling like real. You're feeling real pain. You're feeling real loss. I'm not going to belittle that by giving you some, you know, fluff and stuff. I'm going to tell you, I know the pain you're feeling is real, but let's talk about how we can learn from this, process this, let you come on top after this, and let's grieve together. Let's get through this together, because what you're experiencing is a real part of this physical plane. The trick is, don't get stuck in it forever. And you can and will get back on that wave. But there's no accident that we're on this physical plane that includes trauma, drama, pain, hurt, loss, heartache. We're put here by our creator for a reason, to learn many things. So it's not about pretending they don't exist. It's about, how do we relate to them? How do we deal with them? And how do we not get stuck in past trauma that's going to affect our whole lives? How do we learn from it? How do we become more empathetic to others? How do we love others more because of what we've gone through? At least that's how I see it. And what it's enabled me to do, and sounds like y'all too, is when you have that friend call you, that call isn't falling on deaf ears. You can relate because of personal experience. And if you don't have any personal experiences that, you know, that aren't rosy glow, what use are you to people that are going through real stuff on this physical plane? How do you help them get past it if you've never been through anything but, you know, picnics and jello molds?
Oh, you have the most amazing analogies. I love it.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I've been thinking, this
first... Do you know that I've never freaking made a jello mold, so I don't even know where that came from, but I equate it with fun time. So
even though
I've never made one.
I'm sure, though, you've probably had the opportunity to tell somebody before, hey, look, you're screwed and I can't unscrew you. But now that we know, we can work from there.
You know what? Yeah. All jokes aside, even though we're laughing here.
It's like, yep.
We get at Voodoo Authentica every single day. We get people coming to us with very serious issues. We get people who have lost loved ones, who are fighting for custody of children they love, who are fighting for justice in court cases, who are dealing with very major issues. So not small things. Every single day, we get people that are having these issues. And our way, I assure you, isn't to let them know, it's all going to be all right. You know, just let it ride and time heals all wounds. Even though, yeah, my mama and my mama always told me that, you know, this too will pass, time heals all wounds. And a good walk pretty much solves everything. But beyond that, we do have people with serious issues, and there are things that we have them do to help them get past that. There are spiritual baths that we have them take. There are workings that we ask them to do with spirit. There are workings we do on their behalf, to because where things are seem impossible to us as humans, nothing seems impossible to God and spirit. And also angels, which I work a lot with. I believe in angels so much and that they're with us at all times. I pray to angels a lot, especially with matters of physical healing. When you've got that, you know, you get those people on Facebook or phone calls, they've got an uncle in the hospital. He's about to go into surgery.
Yeah.
The thing that I always do is to send angels to, because they travel, you know, faster than the speed of light. They're there. You talk to an angel, angels are surrounding that person immediately, whether it's to heal or to give them comfort so that their transition is easier for them and the family. So I believe there are spiritual solutions for just about every problem. But there's certain pain, certain stuff just sucks, and certain things just hurt. And it's not that they don't hurt, it's that spirit can help us, can give us the comfort to get past what seems impossible for our physical beings to get past. And that's what spirit and God can help us with, is getting past those things, helping to give us the comfort and the strength to get through the things that we don't see how in the hell we're going to get past on our own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, some people call us about stuff that just involves getting off of their own butts. Yeah. Like, I want a job. I want a better job. And I'm like, okay, what are you doing about that? Well,
I mean, to see
I've
you.
Prayed. I've prayed. I've lit candles. I'm like, have you applied for any jobs? Have you left your home? Well, no, but I've built several altars. I have prayed. I've built several altars. I spend 24/7 when I'm not sleeping, I'm praying. I say, get off your patootie, fill out some job interviews, get your butt out there, because God helps those that help themselves. So you got to do your part. So we also deal with the people that want spirit to do everything for them.
Yeah, that's not an okay plan.
Yeah.
No, it's not a good plan, and it sends the wrong message to the universe. It's like the smallest leaps of faith that I take are so rewarded. I'd say I take a leap of faith and spirit rewards it 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 fold. I take the tiniest leap of faith and spirit rewards that in kind. Kind of like when you contribute to a savings and your work matches it. You know, your work doesn't match. Well, I believe that with spirit, but they go even farther than your workplace does. You show the tiniest leaps of faith. You give spirit something that matters to you, whether it's your time or something that's precious to you. And that is so rewarded. So you have got to make the effort, and spirit will reward that in kind. God will reward that in kind. But the whole sitting in the lazy boy recliner, haven't stopped praying, haven't stopped doing this. I'm like, well, when's the last time your butt got unglued from your lazy boy? You know, because so yeah, that's the thing. It's like prayer, ritual, magic, they work, because otherwise people wouldn't have been using these methods for thousands and thousands of years. Yes, they work, but my God, do something. Take some forward motion, take some action. So whether someone buys a doll or a gree-gree back from us, there's instructions. Here's what you have to do. Here's what you have to put in motion. Spirit's there to help you, but good Lord, do the creative visualization. Get that ball rolling.
Right.
Hey, what is the purpose of a Gregory bag?
A Gregory bag is right now I'm speaking to a New Orleans Gregory bag.
Okay.
All right. So we basically take a piece of square fabric. Some people, traditionally, it's a red piece of flannel and black yarn with the appropriate herbs and roots for that purpose. Okay. We at Voodoo Authentica, we've incorporated color significance because we do believe in the power of color. So let's say we're making a love bag. Well, we use red. That's a color that we attribute to love. And we would so you start with this square of red fabric. We would place rose petals, other little secret ingredients that we'd place in the bag. Roots, herbs, objects, may throw a little piece of rose quartz in there. We cinch up the bag. We tie it. In this case, we want passion involved, depending on the kind of love we're seeking. So we're going to use purple yarn instead of the black yarn. Red and black are what we use for our general good fortune, Gregory. So we cinch the bag. We anoint it with, we make everything at Voodoo Authentica, and it's all made by priests and practitioners. We take that bag, we cinch it up into kind of a ball shape. And I don't know if you have one there, but.
I have the dolls.
Okay, well, we'll move on to dolls.
Looking, they have a bag attached.
Okay, well, that's a form of Gregory bag. But yeah. Some people call them.
Made in China.
Yeah, by the way, let me make it clear, those dolls you're holding up are not from Voodoo Authentica.
I know.
Yeah.
No, they're from Beijing.
Yeah, we look, China produces some amazing things. Like, they make an amazing teacup. They do a wonderful prosperity frog. But when it comes to New Orleans voodoo, I want my New Orleans voodoo dolls made in New Orleans. So yeah. Not made in China. Anyway, moving on to back to Gregory bags. So you end up with this ball. We cinch up that square. We tie it up with the appropriate colored yarn. In this case, a love and passion bag, we'd use the red fabric, the purple yarn, and then we will anoint that. We make our own potion oils too. So we'd anoint that with a love potion number 9, which, you know, is our own
the famous one.
Yeah, our own formula passed down for generations. We make it with love potion number 9, which sits and seeps and holds on to. We sit those in jars for a long time, and they take on the power of the herbs and all of the other ingredients that we keep in the jar before we individually, you know, package them. So we anoint our bag with the love potion number 9. Then we bring it over to the appropriate altar. In this case, we would bring that bag over to Oshun, who is the African Orisha of love, prosperity, or abundance, or Urzuli Freda, which is the Haitian Loa of love, prosperity, and abundance, depending on the situation. And by the way, these are practitioners who are actually making the bag, and the entire process is done with, we're thinking about love. We're thinking about drawing love, the right love to that person.
The intention.
Correct. And we use Thursdays and Fridays are great days to do our love bags. So we try to bring, we also believe in doing them under the waxing moon when we're drawing to us. So it all depends on the type of Gregory we're making. If we're making a Gregory that we need to send away something, negative habits, things like that, that would be done under the waning moon. So we take all that into account when we're making a bag. The finished bag is packaged. We put it in a Ziploc, actually, because we don't want anyone else touching it. anyone else putting their own energy and influence in it. We like people to not open it, not get it wet, not let anyone else touch it. And again, we talked about your part in things. Well, your part is every now and again, refreshing the bag with oil and meditating and visualizing with that bag as often as you can, because we do practitioner made bags that are made specifically for that individual. Like, let's say, Rebel, you came and you wanted a bag. That bag would be, you might send a hair clipping. And we would include that in the bag so that it would attune to your energy. But we also do purpose-oriented bags where they're for love and passion, for money and good luck, that aren't attuned to an individual. So it's the practitioner-made bag and then the bags that we make for purposes. If you walk in and do a while you wait bag, then we would make that specifically for you. It would be blessed specifically for you and your purposes. If we're doing a bag for love and passion, it's going to be made in the way I described to attune it to you personally. You would hold the bag. You'd visualize, let's say you have a person in mind, not an individual because we don't like will control, but the type of person. Let's say you like certain activities. You like to go to the movies, walk to the park, whatever it is you like to do. You would see yourself doing these activities or streaming Netflix till no end and eating some popcorn, okay?
Maybe. That might be me.
Maybe, just maybe might be you. So that's what you'd picture. It's not about ideals. It's about what's really right for you and what you really do. So you don't hold that bag and think, what should I want? You hold that bag and think, what do I want? What's the partner that is actually going to be a good part of my life? So if you, doesn't mean that you shouldn't picture things that get you out of your comfort zone if that's something you want to do. But if you want someone with a good sense of humor, picture yourself laughing with that person. Those are the type of creative visualization exercises we recommend using no matter the tool, whether it's a gri-gri bag, whether it's a doll, whether it's a stone that's special to you that you're using as a type of mojo or talisman, a necklace that you use as a talisman. Those same creative visualization exercises are what continues to broadcast a signal of attracting what you want to you. And every time you empower that piece, you're sending out and broadcasting that signal. The beauty is you don't have to ask for this a bunch of times. It's like, you know, you don't call and order Chinese food and then keep calling and ordering it because you don't think that they're going to send you the food. You order it. You order the food, you know it's on its way.
And you wait.
Right.
And you wait and it comes. So same thing with magic. Don't screw it up by over-ordering. Have the faith, because the faith is one of the most, if not the most important ingredient. Do it. It's kind of like a set it and forget it in a way. work with the bag. Empower the bag. Let the bag, the herbs, all of them are like little soldiers and they know they've been blessed for love and passion, but they need to know that they've been blessed for love and passion specifically for you as an individual. That's where you personalizing your power comes into play. You hold that bag, you let it know what its job is. And once you've done that, it's broadcasting. So although it's not something you have to do every day, it's okay a week later or a month later. You'll feel it because it's a personal talisman. You'll feel when you need to re-empower it. Go ahead, do another session. When you have achieved what you want, well, there are different ways to dispose of that bag. You can keep it on an altar if it's special to you. You can bury that bag, plant it, you know, under a rose so that it's continuing to broadcast that beautiful love that you created in your life. But you don't overwork it, overdo it. It's one of the things I work with a priest, Dr. Glover, and one of the things that people do wrong is they call him every day and they'll say, did you follow the instructions? Well, no, but. Well, no, right. But. He's like, well, nothing's happening. Did you follow my instructions? Well, no, but. He's like, there's no but. Just follow the instructions, baby. Just follow the instructions. But is definitely not a road to success. We'll leave it at that. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah, buts get certain things accomplished, but not the things we're talking about.
Or too often it holds you back because it's stuck to the lazy boy.
There it is. Look, you were talking about dolls. And
yeah,
I think that it's such a popularized yet misunderstood tool that's associated
Absolutely.
With voodoo. Yes. Sometimes erroneously associated with voodoo. Let me start by saying that dolls and effigies have been used for thousands of years by different people. It's a form of sympathetic magic, like attracts like. So you do something to the doll and you want that to happen to... Look, let's go back to way early days and let's take a doll, an effigy of an animal. Well, you see a lot of these ancient effigies and they have spears through them. Well, this is the desired successful result of a hunt.
True. Yeah.
Okay.
Right?
So these are some of the earliest forms of effigies. So when you have a doll, some people have different views on dolls. Some people say that they're early records of doctors. Doctors would use these as a patient record to show, what part of the...
Here's where we remove the whatever you...
Yeah, this is what we took the whatever out of. But... Some people say that they were a record keeper for people who acted, as a doctor or health professional. A pin in the heart means this, a pin in the head means this. But truthfully, their much older use is as a form of sympathetic magic. And when people would see, a pin in a head of a doll, there's an immediate assumption that thanks to movies and media, immediately it's assumed that was used to harm, create a problem with the head, that a pin in a heart was used to create a heart attack, that a pin in a leg was used to create a broken leg. Whereas what we primarily in voodoo, I'm speaking about voodoo here, not black magic. And let me make it clear.
That's very different.
Yeah, that dolls have been used for thousands of years by a variety of different traditions. And just because you see a doll used in magic does not mean that doll is being used by a voodoo practitioner. People who practice black magic is its own thing. And its main rule is getting what you want, no matter the cost and no matter who you hurt. That is not something that an initiated voodoo practitioner adheres to in general. Most of us believe in consequences for our actions, whether they be physical or spiritual actions. So all these hexes and different things you hear about, this is not being done willy-nilly. We do a lot of self-preservation, but we will not just, you need a hex? Sure, we'll do a hex. Not a thing, because we really care about, we care about karma. We care about what's coming back. There's always the, you point the finger gun, You got right. one finger pointing out. And I know you hear this a lot. You got that thumb and three fingers pointing back at you. And that's a lot of what, let me see. Yeah. That's a lot of what, no, point the gun, point the gun. Yeah, exactly. One finger pointing out, the rest pointing back at you. And that's really how magic works. What you point out, the rest you're going to receive back to you. And it can come pretty fast. So people who practice magic know this. And so that's why you don't get a lot of voodoo practitioners eager, real voodoo practitioners who are initiated. You don't get a lot of them eager to do hexing and any type of magic that is negative. And we will protect, but in terms of initiating negative magic, what we do mostly is if negative magic is sent out to us or someone we care about or a client, we will do the equivalent of holding up a mirror, doing a return to sender. So we don't initiate, we won't typically initiate the negative work, but we will damn well hold up a mirror and send your own back to you.
That's a win on every level.
It's a win on every level because nothing's coming back on us. We didn't initiate anything. We're just like, hope you like what you sent us because it's coming back in your direction. And toot sweet. Basically, back to the dolls. When we use a doll at in New Orleans, at Voodoo Authentica specifically, they come with instructions. Those instructions include a note about karma. And we use a doll, we will use a hair or nail clipping to personalize the doll. This is, we want people to succeed. We want them to use magic and sympathetic magic, like attracts like, to get the love they want, get the promotion they want, get the success, the healing that they want. So we use dolls, again, different people use them in different ways. I'm letting you know how we use them. And how we use them is to assist people to achieve their positive goals. So if we put a pin in a doll, we have the white pin and the black pin. White pin is to attract. The black pin is to send negative influences away. White pin is to draw positive influences to us. So if you see a white pin in the heart of a doll, we are typically trying to heal the proverbial heart. Someone's gone through a heartache. It's almost like a kind of spiritual acupuncture where we are sending positive energy using that doll as a focusing point, a focusing pin, if you will, to send positive energy and center it into this doll that's been consecrated and named as this person or a person that person cares about, ourselves, a client, someone they care about. They want to send healing in their direction. So we're anointing that doll as that person, energizing, personalizing it with a hair or nail clipping, even spit, whatever we've got that will personalize that doll and make it that person or represent that person's energy. And we are sending that healing, zeroing in. And that's why we're using that pin. Like I said, kind of a spiritual acupuncture to centralize and focus our energy on that area. If it's the head, someone may be troubled. They may be having dreams that are plaguing them. So we want to heal that area and send as much healing as possible into that area of their body, of their psyche, of their being, of their consciousness. So when you see a pin in a doll, don't automatically assume it's for something negative, because that is not how we at Voodoo Authentica are using a doll. I say that not as a way to self-promote and keep saying Voodoo Authentica, but to let you know that I can only speak to how we are using the dolls, because there are people, I can't whitewash it. There are people who are using dolls in practices outside of voodoo for nefarious purposes, just like it's a tool. I can use a gun to hunt for food to feed my family. I can also use a gun to commit heinous murders. These are tools, and they can be used for good and for bad. So there are people outside of voodoo that practice black magic that can do great harm to others with a doll. It is not something that we believe in and that we think is a good or spiritually responsible idea. As I said, we are not namby-pamby and we will protect our own, but the main way we do that is by sending your own back to you, and that is more than enough.
I would say for a lot of people, that's definitely more than enough. So
there are some people who participate in acts that are so heinous that a magical group, it may be a group of witches, it may be a group of another spiritual tradition outside of voodoo, it may even be voodoo people that agree in their own houses. Remember, these groups are all over the world and have their own rules and their own traditions. And sometimes an act by an individual or group is considered so heinous that spiritual people will get involved for some type of punishment if a person has engaged in, God forbid, child rape again and again. And the morality of that, that's on them. They made the choice to do this, but you can understand that sometimes people do feel the need to initiate magic like that and take matters into their own hands when they're simply not seeing results and they know that people, the most vulnerable among us, are at harm. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. I'm just letting you know that it does take place.
Right.
There's also something that's a little different that falls outside of, let's say, voodoo proper. They're called bokors, and they're spiritual mercenaries for hire. And a bokor is, I say mercenary, not meaning that they all, you know, kill someone, but there are people who will take on a case that it comes down to the dollar, typically. Mm. All bokors have their own rules. No bokors are beholden by one set of rules, but it's like, I want to win this political campaign, here's my money on the table, and do whatever it takes. I want to win this court battle, here's my money on the table, I want you to do whatever it takes. The bokor takes the money, they deal with whatever spirits they need to get the job done. Money's exchanged, and like I said, they're not beholden to one group of morals or mores. Bokors are self-governed. And so some will take on certain cases that others won't. I call them spiritual mercenaries for hire, not to be insulting at all, because there's a place for them for certain things.
Yeah.
But they go outside of the, like, this isn't something you would go, if you went to a voodoo priest or priestess or a mambo or ungan, there are certain cases that mambos and ungans will take on. And there are certain cases, again, they are beholden to their own morals, but there are certain things that would get referred out to a bokor that would not fit into the moral structure of certain mambo and ungan. Hello.
Say hello.
Hi.
Hey little pumpkin pie. I see a little precious girl.
Oh, you're coming. She's coming back, Brandy.
Oh, okay. She's got busy stuff to do. Hey.
Oh, no thanks.
What are you, eating something?
Say, no, I'm playing with what? What is that? Kinetic sand. Yeah.
Oh my God. My daughter makes a mess with that stuff. Do you make a mess with it? daughter is, and she made a mess with that kinetic sand. I found it places that you should never find sand or anything else for that matter.
Yes, currently it's all over my Eiffel Tower rug, and we're going to be cleaning that up for days.
For some time, huh?
So, well, Brandy, thank you so much for coming on and speaking with us. This has been exactly what I wanted to hear and learn from you today, and I just can't thank you enough for coming. This is great.
It's been very enlightening, very informative. Your passion has come through, and to really that you've been able to speak and shed light on not just the culture of New Orleans, but your religion, your culture that's been passed from generation to generation, from cultures not even on this continent. And I mean, really, it's a American voodoo. It's it's like the culmination of this continent's contribution to the practice.
Oh, I have to throw in there that New Orleans voodoo, a beauty of it, it's very inclusive. From Marie Laveau's time, she included people, French, Spanish, people of all colors of the rainbow were included in her ceremonies. And that's another thing that makes New Orleans voodoo so special. It seeks to include, not disclude, to make people feel as welcome as the energy of New Orleans makes people feel. And we touched on how voodoo had been misrepresented and maligned. That's because it makes for more interesting movie and media telling, but it's so far from the truth. This is New Orleans voodoo. It's diverse. It's life affirming. It's welcoming. It heals people. It helps people. And that's just what I wanted to get across. You are welcome. We always say Voodoo Authentica, where you belong. It's because everyone belongs. This is not meant to exclude anyone. And spiritual traditions that exclude others based on physical characteristics, I say, is that spiritual? I think not. Spirit doesn't see culture, it doesn't see color, it sees our spirit and for who we are. And I believe in making people feel welcome and included, and that spirit speaks to us all. And just wanted to leave you on that note. And spirit has something to offer all of us. And that offering is, we are connected, we are not alone, and they're available to us if we just listen.
Well, thank you again.
Okay, bye, Miss Kinetic Sand.